What happens when two friends have a close encounter of the wrong turned kind? And then we take a look at the story of a family who decides to reconnect with a lost family member. However, by the time they track him down, he's already dead, leaving them with nothing more than an urn full of ashes. But when the cremated remains are brought home, is it possible they're bringing home more than they bargained for? Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. If you guys listened to yesterday's episode, I'm sure you guys are happy as a clam. Or what's a group of clams called? Probably something like a pile, right? A pile of clams. A quiver of cobras, a herd of cows, and a pile of clams. We got a lot of stuff to cover today, so first off, let's go ahead, we'll get to it. I'll explain what's going on, but got a lot of stuff to cover today. First off, running into Dead Rabbit Radio Command, everyone get on your feet and give it up for Ellie Rack. Woohoo, yeah, wee! He's coming on in with a pile of clams on a plate and a horrific seafood allergy. Ellie Rack, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. Longtime Patreon supporter Ellie Rack, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the show financially through the Patreon or merch store, PayPal, donations, whatever, that's fine. Really, really is. I say it every episode and I truly do mean it. That's totally fine. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. That helps out so much. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. If you listen to yesterday's episode, you're probably still a little bit depressed. I'm recording this episode, honestly, maybe like an hour after that last one. You're like, oh, are you still melancholy? Are you still sad? Are you a sad little Jason? You know what's funny? I mean, things are going great. Things are actually going really well. But that's the way this kind of works, right? Sometimes you just kind of feel down. But I don't feel down. I just feel, I don't know how I feel. I mean, I know I feel melancholy. I know I keep using that word over and over again. But yeah, and it's funny. I the other night I was thinking, when I die, you're like, Jason, that last episode was so depressing. Don't talk about this stuff again. I was probably wouldn't have listened to this one if I knew that it took place just minutes afterwards. It's been about an hour since I recorded the last episode. I said when I fell asleep the other night, I thought about who was going to find me when I was dead. They'd probably just open the door and smell me, and then they'd just leave. That'd be the smart thing, right? Just assume that I'm dead, not that I've broken my toilet and I'm just laying in my own filth in the bathroom. What's funny is I remember I was trying to kind of piece together why I started thinking that in the first place. I remember the night before, I was thinking, when I die, because I leave candy out for the ants, because I love ants, right? I could have an ant farm like a normal person. But no, instead I'll buy like candy specifically to feed to ants, and I'll lick it. Yummy, yummy, yummy. I love ants. It's all a trap. It's to feed my vor fetish. I'm like, let me devour you. I'll get a lollipop and I'll get it started, right? I'll lick it. Yum, yum, yum. And then I set it down, and watch the ants eat it. Can that explain why I'm melancholy just all day long? I'm staring at ants eating a lollipop. You know, when I walk by, I'll go, oh, look at, there's that lollipop covered in ants. People are like, it's so weird, Jason. So gross. I love ants. I watch them build these little barricades to protect the candy. I was thinking, when I die, who's going to feed the ants? Like, nobody, Jason, because nobody does that. That's so insane. Buy an ant farm, you lunatic. See, I actually have a pretty good setup, because what happens is, I learned this a long time ago, by not being clean, the lessons you learn by being a filthy human. If I feed the ants on my windowsill, They don't go anywhere else in my house. They don't have to. Imagine if you sent out an exploratory party and you're like, oh, we just walked like 5 feet. In ant distances, that's like, you know, a couple miles, but we got a lollipop. We don't have to go into his kitchen to see if he has oatmeal in there. And if he did, we prefer a lollipop. I was like, when I die, the ants, they're going to be like, the next year, they're going to show up. There's not going to be no lollipops because I feed them all. I feed them for months and months. This goes on and on until they don't show up anymore. And I'm all, oh, my ant buddies, it's too cold for you to come out of your hive. I go, what happens then? I go, I wonder if the ants will remember me. I wonder if the ants will be like, dude, what happened to that guy who used to give us food? Like, there was always a big old lollipop or a Jolly Rancher or something. And the ants would go, they'd go, it'd be summertime, and they'd come to the windowsill, and there'd be no lollipop. And then they'd go back to the queen, and they're like, hey, I don't know what's going on, but that ain't no candy up there. And the queen's like, oh, they must know I exist, right? Because I'm just this giant monster walking by every once in a while. They're like, ah, the eye is upon us. The queen would go, oh, well, I guess, you know, the tide turns. I wonder if an ant's ever even seen the ocean, if you think about it. It's not very ant-friendly. There's not much on the beach. You figure it would keep falling and killing the ants. Like, they're trying to build a tunnel through the beach. Kids are running, playing hacky sack, and the ants are like, ah. But I'm sure through the... Don't worry, I'll get to the stories eventually. You're like, Jason, you need to take a break. You're just... This is getting weird. An ant at the beach. I'm sure at the... Throughout history, at least one ant has seen the ocean. I think that's a pretty fair bet. Throughout the 4 billion years the Earth has been here, at least one ant seen the ocean. What was it? Oh yeah, because the queen ant would be like, just like the tide comes in and out, so does the lifespan of our gods, those who feed us. So they'd build like banners for me. They'd have like little woven, they'd capture some spiders and they're like punching the spiders in the gut to shoot out silk. And then they'd have like a little banner of me in their ant hall of fame. It's just me. It's me and a lollipop. That's it. That's the only thing that's in their hall of fame. Yeah, I remember. I think that might have started it. I think I was like, oh, when I die, who's going to feed my ants? I don't know why I'm on this kick all of a sudden. People are alarmed. People are like, oh man, nothing's happening, right? You don't have any some sort of deadly disease. Nah, you know, every so often, you know, it's very rare. I recognize this. Like, this has happened before. We're just getting in a funk. But it's funny because everything's going great. Better than great. Maybe it's just the change into the season, something like that. I haven't been taking my vitamins for a while either. That could be part of it. But anyways, let's go ahead and get started with this episode. Oh, and I want to say, we haven't done this in a while. Fan Art Friday. Look at this awesome piece from Rudy Jazz. Rudy has started knitting, if that's the right term, crocheting these little Dead Rabbit Radio heads. So really, really cool. Really, really appreciate it. You guys are all so awesome. You guys are great. You, if there's anybody in the world that I wanted to depress, it's you. No, don't feel bad. It's just, you know, melancholy. This is not like a warning. I'm not like putting anything out there. Nothing like that. But I just wanted to talk about ants. I should do more ant-related stories. They'd be, you will never see me more excited than when I talk about ants. Ellie Rack, let's go ahead and get this party started. I'm going to go ahead and toss you the keys to the Dead Rabbit Dirigible. Let's leave behind Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Wave goodbye to the ants, but we're coming back. We're coming back with some lollipops for him. Ellie Rack, we're leaving behind Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Glide us all the way out to Wales. Nice leisurely flight over the country of Wales. Also, if you listened to a couple episodes ago, hit me up. Let me know if the volume is good on these episodes. I'm still trying to figure that out since I had that technical glitch. Anyways, we're headed all the way out to Wales. It's November 23rd, 1977. It's 8 p.m. And there's a BMW driving down the road There's four guys in it, four friends, four teammates. And they just got done playing a rugby match. Oi, mate, that sure was great the way we gave them a pounding. Yeah, it was. I seen it with my own peepers. I did. They're not, Wales is not part of Britain. I don't know. It's nearby Britain, right? It's part of the United Kingdom. Yes, I did see it. I did see it, good sir. The way that we gave them the roundabout. Oh, yes. They'll never play another game of rugby against us. And these rugby players are like, ha, ha, ha. They're driving down this road. When all of a sudden, in front of this BMW, there's a truck that jackknifes. There's a semi-truck driving down the road that jackknifes. And the cab starts turning one way and the load is going another way. The truck begins to overturn. And during the course of just raw physics that's going on, the BMW is completely destroyed. These four young men coming home from this rugby match are killed in this tragic car accident on this otherwise beautiful day or night. It's 8 p.m., but still tragic. Now, there is a periodical, I don't know if they're still around, but I think they might be in some form, called Flying Saucer Review. And one of the researchers working for Flying Saucer Review, a man named F.W. Holliday, hears about this story, but it doesn't involve UFOs. There's no alien encounter here. Or is there? Because when FW comes across this story, he starts going, that sounds really familiar. He's looking, he goes, story took place in Wales, and he's looking it up, and he goes, okay, so this accident took place near Nanty Caws Hill. And that's just outside of Carmarthen, Wales. And he goes, tragic story, but I've heard of that place before. Not just that, I've heard about that place pretty recently. He goes, 3 months earlier, there was an alien encounter in that area. It's 2:30 a.m. on August 28th, 1977. There was a young man driving a large truck full of merchandise. His name was Francis Lloyd, 24, and he was driving it with his friend John Dwyer, who was 16. And they're coming down the A48, coming from Haverford West, and they're about 2 miles outside of Carmarthen. 2:30 in the morning, it's late in the morning, it's late at night, early in the morning, however you see it. Just rolling pastures in the area, and Francis is driving this truck, and they're going up one hill, down, and up another hill, and down, and as Francis is driving down, coming into this dip before he hits the next hill, he sees something. Standing on the right-hand side of the road, he sees two 7-foot-tall humanoids. Also, these two men were dressed very weird. They were wearing celluloid suits, which I had to look up exactly what that was. I know celluloid as in film. It was transparent. Their clothing was transparent. They had huge heads that reminded Francis of Busby's. I had to look that up too. Those are those big, tall, furry hats that British guards wear. They also, their heads were 1 foot wide. So that would be, even if they were 5'9", would be a giveaway that they weren't human if their heads were a foot wide. Anyways, he says he's coming down and on the right side of the road, he sees these 7 foot tall humanoid standing there with these huge heads. He goes, they were both facing each other, and between them, they were holding a object. Both of these men also had these chrome or silver antennae jutting out of their chests. And then angled up, I'm assuming, because he described them as being taller than their heads. Francis doesn't even slow down. He sees all this stuff on the side of the road. He clearly sees them. They're illuminated by the truck's headlights as they're coming down this hill. And they just drive on past. And Francis said, he goes, you know, it didn't scare us. And John apparently saw them as well. He goes, it didn't scare either of us. It was a weird feeling. It gave us a weird feeling. Francis, who talked to F.W. Holliday about this, he goes, listen, I don't believe in UFOs, but I'll tell you one thing. They weren't human. I don't know what they were. Aliens, probably the best thing I could use to describe them. They weren't human at all. These weren't just circus freaks. Francis goes, we didn't have any desire to get to the bottom of this either. We just saw two giant aliens on the side of the road. I mean, that's probably a pretty safe bet. Two aliens on the side of the road. We're not going to stop to see what they want. We just kept going. And he told FW about this. He knew they weren't human. Didn't see a UFO or anything like that, but figured, I don't know what else they could be. He told FW about this. And FW published this story all together in a Flying Saucer Review, Volume 24, Issue 1. And the implication is this, is that the same thing happened in November. The implication is that a truck driving down that same road in generally that same area saw these entities. Or, like, here's the thing. If you're driving down the road and you saw something crazy, it's going to distract you. It might actually frighten you. You might be coming down this road and let's say you saw half a deer dragging its guts across the road in front of you. You're probably going to slam on the brakes. Because it's gross, right? You're going to be like, I don't want to. You're closing your eyes. You're like, ah, it's so gross. Take your hands off the steering wheel. Could have seen something that distracted the truck driver. That's actually, this is all guesswork. It could have just been a tragic road accident that killed these four rugby players. But if the truck driver saw something that distracted him and he lost control of the truck, that's one thing. There's the other idea here that the aliens intentionally caused the accident. For whatever reason, who knows? Who knows? The aliens could have simply distracted the truck driver in November and caused this horrific car accident. But then you wonder, too, like, what if the aliens caused it on purpose? Because if you think about it, you know, science does require two things. And really, if you look at all UFO stories, I shouldn't say all, but for the majority of UFO stories, especially the ones where they interact with humans, a huge component of it is scientific research or learning new things, the transfer of knowledge. Aliens coming down, talking to people about earthly customs, or they're telling humans about what their missions are. Sometimes it's conversations. Sometimes it's experimentation. Aliens abducting humans and saying, hey, we're going to run a series of tests on you. Aliens abducting humans and say, hey, we need you as part of our alien-human hybrid program. Then you have stories of aliens abducting humans and really doing what can only be described as torture. They're conducting these very, very painful medical experiments on people against their will. So was it something like that? Like, you know, the alien, this might sound bizarre. We really don't have any evidence for any of this, so let's put on our conspiracy cap. But, I mean, you could have these aliens setting up this device. They're working on something, and they are running an experiment. They want to know something that requires a bunch of people to die. Why? Who knows? But I mean, we've done experiments like that. Very famously, when you look at World War II experiments, you know, that we have, that the Nazis did as far as, like, I mean, all sorts of horrible stuff with Dr. Joseph Mengele. Mengele?
mangle.
And then there's that very notorious Japanese Japanese scientific facility. What's it called? Like Order 732. I'll put it in the show notes if you want to ruin your day. And you would have groups that would do things to see, like, how long can an arm survive sub-zero temperatures? We're going to freeze this guy's arm and see how long it takes before it falls off. It seems brutal. It is brutal. It's torture. What happens if we spray this chemical in somebody's eyes? How long will it take for them to go blind? Like minute by minute. Things like that. Some of these experiments, these torturous experiments that humans have done on other humans, have moved science forward. When you had these morally exempt characters who, you know, were probably doing it for their own enjoyment, but also because they had these theories, and they go, well, what'll happen if X equals Y? What happens if we do X? And since we don't have really any compassion for the victims of this, you know, Japanese were doing it against American servicemen, and the Joseph Mengele experiments were against people in the concentration camps, gypsies, Jews, homosexuals. Like, what does it matter, right? They're going to die anyways. We're going to run these experiments. Now, what's interesting is obviously, like, America has its own history of this with the Tuskegee experiments with syphilis, telling people, come here, we'll treat your syphilis. Mostly, I think it was for all black men, we'll treat your syphilis. And they go, no, we're not going to treat it. We're going to see what happens. We're going to look at the different stages of syphilis up close. It's horrific. It's horrible. The problem is that it has garnered scientific knowledge. So I wonder if that was this type of situation where the most logical thing is that the truck driver just got distracted by whatever was out there and caused this accident that killed these men. But I also wonder if the aliens, they were like that box, like they were out there running an experiment and they got the answers they wanted from it. But we're left with just questions of, you know, why did these young men die? What happened with this truck accident? And so on and so forth. Ellie Rack, let's go ahead and toss you the keys to the Carboner Copter. We are leaving behind Wales. Fly us all the way out to Maryland, maybe? I think it was Maryland based on a couple of context clues. Definitely seems to be somewhere up in the, what would that be really considered? Eastern seaboard, definitely, but Northeast? I don't know. I don't know, man. My geography is really bad. Maybe someday the ants will crawl into my ears and teach me all the knowledge they know of the surrounding 50 feet from the windowsill. I wonder what the farthest the single ant has ever traveled. Like, just one dude. I know there's an ant colony. Now they have those super colonies. There's an ant colony that apparently stretches from Spain up into, like, Germany. It's a single colony of ants. Super colony. You can't just call them a regular colony. And apparently there's another super colony in the Americas that is, like, from South America up into Texas. I mean, massive amounts. Nations, really, at that point. Nations of ants. I want to give a shout out to the last 747 for sending this story over. The last 747's been really on the ball with sending some great stuff. Really appreciate it. Back on episode 1250, that's what gave 747 the kind of idea for this. Episode 1250, I talked about, do ghosts talk to each other? We covered, if I remember correctly, a elementary school. We had a kid who died, and then at a later date, a teacher or principal, they weren't entirely for sure who it was, who died as well. And there had been reports of hearing a student and a staff member, they heard it like a kid's voice and an adult's voice talking to each other. And it was the idea that you had two separate ghosts who died at two separate times. It wasn't like one shared tragedy. Two separate ghosts who died at two separate times talking to each other. And I had that question of like, can ghosts talk to each other? Like, I would imagine if three people died at the same time, their ghosts could talk to each other, right? They're like, what? We're ghosts? The other guy's like, oh, I didn't know we were ghosts. But to think that you, like a sea captain dies in the middle of the ocean and his ghost finds its way back home, and then 30 years later, an old woman dies because she accidentally electrocutes herself plugging in her toaster. Would those two ghosts be able to talk to each other? That's kind of what I was thinking. He found this story, The Last 747, found a really interesting story. Let's take a look at it. We're in possibly Maryland, somewhere around there. The year's 2009, and we're about to meet a man. Let's call him Michael, and his wife, we'll call her Phyllis. And one night they were kind of like talking about their family histories, kind of where they had come from and all that. Through the course of this conversation, Phyllis goes, you know, it's interesting and kind of sad, really, but I don't know where my dad is. I don't know what happened to my dad. We'll call the dad Jerry. She goes, you know, at a certain point, my mom and my dad got a divorce. And then after the divorce, he went to jail. He was in jail for a while, and then when he was released, he went missing. But none of us really liked him that much. None of us really cared to look for him. Now, not that he necessarily gone missing, ran afoul of, you know, a drug dealer, ran afoul of some, you know, random murderer or anything like that. Just nobody knew where he went. Type of missing. And because nobody really missed him, nobody really went looking for him. Well, it's December of 2009, and Michael's thinking about this, and he goes, you know what, I wonder if I can track down Jerry. I wonder if I can track down Phyllis's dad. So he starts to Google him, starts to look into this whole thing, and oddly enough, Michael finds out that Jerry had died that year. He died in May 2009. Jerry's like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, we were just talking about him, and I just decided to look him out. He died earlier this year. That's kind of sad. Apparently, after he had gotten out of jail, Jerry went to go find his brother. And moved around, looked for him for a bit, but eventually, Jerry found out that his brother had died. His brother had already passed away. Jerry eventually, you know, he's old man, gets admitted to a nursing home and dies. Dies in May 2009 in this nursing home. And because he didn't have any family really looking for him or wanting to be part of his life, because, you know, he probably wasn't that nice of a guy, it kind of sounded like. The nursing home had his ashes, and they were actually looking for a family member to take the ashes. And Michael contacts them and says, hey, you know, I found out that my father-in-law is Jerry. He's the guy who lived at your nursing home and passed away, and you have his ashes, and we will take possession of them. But it was way harder than that. He said that, you know, my wife had to get a bunch of documents together, like her birth certificate, proving that that's her dad, which makes sense, right? I mean, you could technically, if they didn't have these in place, you could call up a nursing home tomorrow and be like, ah, whose ashes do you got? Send me some. Send me all of them. It doesn't matter. She had to prove that she was a member of the family. Well, they are able to do that. They do get Jerry's ashes. Well, now what? Right now, what are you going to do with them? They figure out they have to have a plan. They can't just keep them forever. They'll have to have them, you know, buried at some point, or maybe scattered at the sea. But again, Phyllis is probably like, listen, dude, we really didn't get along. We really didn't like the guy that much. Now I got his ashes hanging out in their house. They take him, they put him up on the dining room shelf. Because where else are you going to put the ashes of a man you didn't really like that much? They put him up on the dining room shelf. A couple months later, Michael asks his son, they have a 10-year-old son, we'll call him Billy. Michael goes, hey, Billy, I need you to go downstairs. Go down to the basement, and I need you to grab something for me. And he tells Billy what it is. And Billy's like, I know, I'm not going to do that. Michael's like, what? Wait, did you just say you're not going to do that? I'm telling you to do something. You're going to do it. Billy's like, nope. Nope, I'm 10 years old. And I'm not doing it because I'm becoming a little man. This is a preview of the teenage years where I stand up to my parents. He goes, Dad, I'm not going down there because there's something in that basement. And it's not nice. Michael's like, what are you talking about? This is the first time he's ever heard anything like this from his son. Billy's like, dude, there's something down there and it's not nice and it scares me. I'm not going down there. And Michael, luckily, you know, sounds like a good dad. He's the one who posted this story. So definitely it's his view of things. But, you know, he's a good dad in the sense that, yeah, his son's disobeying a direct order. But Michael could tell that his son truly was scared. This wasn't something that he was used to seeing his son be scared to go into the basement. So Michael picks up on that and he goes, okay, Billy, I'll go down there. I'll go down to the basement to get what I need. It's March, April 2010. Michael and Phyllis go over to a friend's house, and the friend is actually hosting a medium at his house. Michael and Phyllis are like, oh, that'd be really cool. We've never done anything like that. We've never, like, talked to a medium, and it'd be kind of a neat thing to do, right? Talk to the dead, talk to the departed souls on a Saturday night. Let's go. They had not met the medium before they get over to the friend's house. And they're over there. There's apparently like a couple people over there hanging out with the friend and the medium. And the medium, let's call her Jackie. Jackie is talking to Phyllis and Michael, and she goes, there's something connected to you two. It's not here with us now, but there's something. I see something in a room with no windows. I see something in a room with no windows. I can help you get rid of it if you want. And they're like, what are you talking about? Michael then says that this medium, Jackie, was able to describe their living room to a T. Now, you could go, well, you know, there's a friend there that invited the medium over. Maybe this is some sort of gimmick, right? He'd been over there. He knew what their living room looked like. Later that night, as people kind of leave the event, you know, I don't know exactly what type of party this was. It does seem like it would be kind of cool to hang out with a bunch of people and talk to a medium. Later on, after a bunch of people leave, it's just Michael and Phyllis, their friend, and the medium, Jackie, they're all just kind of talking. And all of a sudden, like mid-conversation, Jackie just stops, looks right at Phyllis, and says, quote, your grandmother wants that SOB out of your house. Phyllis does confess, listen, our family didn't get along with Jerry. We didn't really get along with my dad, but my grandmother hated his guts. 2 weeks after that, Billy said to his parents, he goes, does this house feel heavy? Does this house feel heavy to you? And they're like, what are you talking about? What does that mean? Billy goes, listen, there's some stuff going on. I don't even The other day, I came home from school. And I came home from school and I just walked through the living room and was walking up to my room. And I realized that somebody was sitting in your chair, Dad. In the living room, someone was sitting in your chair. I just walked right by it. And didn't even really think of it. And I got to the top of the stairs and I realized someone was in your chair. And I walked back down the stairs and I'm looking. And I see Grandma sitting in that chair. Billy's great-grandma sitting in that chair. And Billy's walking and he sees Grandma sitting in that chair. And Grandma looks at Billy and says, quote, "I want that SOB out of the house now." Billy goes, "That's not the only time they've talked to me. There are people in this house, Dad. There's people in this house and they're trying to talk to me, but I won't let them. I won't let them. I don't want to talk to them and I won't let them talk to me. And there's something in the basement. I know I said it before, but Dad, there's something in the basement and it's mean. It's right in the corner. It's in the corner of the basement and it's mean and it's scary. And I know it's there. I don't go down there anymore, but I know it's there, Dad. I know it's there." And when Billy described where he knew this thing was, that is when Michael realized that it was directly underneath where Jerry's ashes were stored in the dining room. Underneath that dining room shelf, directly underneath it in the basement, was the corner of that basement, was where the fear lived. Very next day, Michael called a funeral home, made arrangements. 2 days later, the ashes were dropped off at the funeral home. About a week after that, Billy's talking to his mom, talking to Phyllis, and he says, "Does this house feel lighter to you?" It's a super interesting story. When we take a look at it, it was posted online by someone going by the name Pretend Car 365. Because it does go back to that question about ghosts kind of interacting with each other. This is a bit different because it's family. So you have different people in the house. They have that connection. As opposed to the student and the staff member and the school story. But it's still the same setup. You'd have people who died at different times interacting with each other. You would kind of extrapolate that. I'm wondering if the grandmother spirit was hanging out with this family. I don't know if this is the house she died in. I don't know if this is a long-term family house. But it's possible that the grandmother spirit was just with the family, no matter where they went, just to keep an eye on them. And everything was going great. Nothing was disturbing anything until they brought Jerry's ashes home. Now, Michael says, he goes, "Listen, both my wife and my son do tend to kind of be able to pick up on these paranormal, like, events." He goes, I'm not sensitive at all like that. He explained it to, he goes, "I imagine I'm an AM radio and they're picking up FM airwaves." It's a good analogy. It's a good analogy to it. But even then, there doesn't seem to be any talk about spirits before this, at least in this house. But when Jerry's ashes were brought home, and the grandmother, who may have just been a calming presence in their environment, keeping an eye on her loved ones, once Jerry was involved, she had to manifest. She had to get that SOB out of there. Because it was a purely negative spirit. He probably was a negative man in life. And now that he's been freed from biological constraints, could have been far more dangerous as a spirit. And it's in the basement. It's gathering power. It's feeding off of Billy's fear. Now, it's possible also that, you know, it was just a confused spirit and it was just a chaotic moment for him. But the way he's kind of portrayed through the whole narrative is that he just wasn't a good guy in life. You would hope that people get redeemed in death. If they can't find redemption during life, they find it on the other side. But that might not be the case for everybody. It might not be the case for Jerry. And the grandmother had a manifest to make the message known. And first off, you know, you imagine the grandmother went with them to see the medium. Or contacted them when they were with the medium. You know, contacted the medium while they were all together. Because the grandmother spirit knew they needed to get that message. But it didn't change anything. So then she appeared to Billy. You know, you could always argue that the medium, maybe it was fake, maybe it was a parlor trick. But when your own son is pretty much saying the same message, then you do have to take action. You got to get rid of the ashes. And what I also think is interesting is the parallel we covered, I think it was last week, about the band practicing in the old house. And it ended with a woman walking through a doorway. She sees an old man kind of leaning against the doorway and she walks right past him. She sees him, but she doesn't really think about it. She just walks right past him, gets a couple steps into the next room and realizes, I just saw a old man who shouldn't be here. And he was translucent. But yet as she was walking through the room and was looking at him, she wasn't thinking anything was off. She actually kind of angled her body so she could squeeze through the doorway as if there was a real human standing there. It's not until she gets a couple steps into the next room when she realizes, oh my God, that's a ghost. It's the same setup with this story where Billy walks and he sees someone in the chair, but he just walks by and goes up the stairs like he has 100 times. We move in such automatic ways as humans. That when paranormal happens, we don't always pick up on it right away. Sometimes our brain does have to have that moment to go, wait a second. What did I just see? And then that's when the fear hits you. Interesting story, interesting parallels to all of this stuff. I imagine that the grandmother's ghost is still with this family, is still watching over them, protecting them. And it is a good thing that she did, because had she not been there, it's possible that Jerry's spirit in that basement would have continued to just grow stronger and stronger and stronger until it did more than just scare Billy. It's able to manipulate him. Things were already reaching out to him. He could already hear entities speaking to him. And I don't know if the grandmother was one of them, because she had to manifest to give that message to him. So I imagine one of the voices was Jerry's, but think about what other entities in that house could have been trying to talk to Billy. It's also possible that Jerry was impersonating different voices. The voices... The evil spirits aren't going to tell you to do evil things right off the bat. We've covered stories like that. First, they're going to gain your trust. First, they're going to act like your friend. And then they're going to have you to start do the dangerous stuff. Because if a ghost can talk to another ghost, and that does seem to be something that we look at, who's to say that Jerry didn't want total control over his grandson? Probably a boy he had never met while he was alive. But if Jerry played his cards right, if he used his infernal presence to corrupt Billy, it's possible that he could have spent more time with him, not as a living boy, but as a ghost standing next to him, forever trapped in the darkest corner of the basement. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal, conspiracy, and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day. I'm glad you listened to it today.